This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Bring it fast. Bring it to the bank. Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, now we are joined by Richard, who you may know from his work at Yahoo Sport, also the Blue Moon podcast, and this very podcast where he appears fairly frequently. Richard, Manchester City, final day of the season, had to pick up a win to guarantee third, not have to deal with the whole play-in game. You succeeded in that venture. Start of the season, you know, we're one of the teams, Pep Guardiola comes in, title favorites. How do you view your third place finish and the path it took to get here?
Well, ultimately, we have to be content with third place. There's not really a choice. We have to just accept it and get on with it. There is no doubt that compared to the start of season expectations, that a third place finish is below par. And it's not just that it's below par in terms of the position, but it's way off the pace in terms of how long we've been out of the title race and how far off Chelsea and Tottenham we ultimately were. It's hard not to be disappointed by that, because obviously Guardiola came in with a hell of a lot of expectation. And with good, you know, good cause, this is a man who prior to City had won 21 trophies in 7 seasons and managed two of Europe's biggest football clubs and created probably two of the best football teams ever. In Barca's case, had created, I think, the best club football side of all time. And in Bayern Munich's case, he evolved one of the best teams into something even better. And so it was hard, as a club who aren't on that stature, it was hard not to get carried away by the idea of becoming like that. And the first 10 games of the season were... they weren't perfect, but we won the first 10 games, which is a huge achievement. And some of those games were phenomenal, including, I would argue, and feel free to think that I'm getting carried away and this is a bit of bias getting in the way of my thinking here. But I think that the first half at Old Trafford, when we beat United, I would argue was the finest 45 minutes on display in the Premier League this season. That's how good I thought City were. And so that really sort of ignited things. That was obviously the first Mourinho and Guardiola clash, which was massively hyped up. It didn't take long after that for it to start to unravel a little bit. And when we were bad, we were atrocious. And the defending was really horrific in the sort of defeats at Leicester and Everton. The Leicester game was probably the low point of Guardiola's career, I would say. The 4-2 defeat where we were 2-0 behind after 4 minutes and Vardy scored a hat-trick. Scored for 13 games prior or 16 games prior. I forget. I think it was one of the two. It was an embarrassment. It all ends up. And possibly the only game in history where I've been annoyed that we scored 2 goals, because they were right at the end and it allowed us to, in the grand scheme of things, you know, when we look back on the record books, it flatters us. It deceived just how bad we were, and we needed to know after that game how atrocious we'd been. But there was the nadir of the season. Obviously, as we've gone on, we've stuttered and started, and at times it's been absolutely fantastic. There's no denying that. When we've clicked, like the 2 games away to West Ham in the FA Cup and the league, sort of in quick succession of each other, we were dominant and we saw exactly how good it can be. As the season's progressed, we've seen Vincent Kompany back in and we've seen that, okay, the defence is still far from perfect, but at least it can be organised and it can have a bit of leadership. And that players like Otamendi, who have been underwhelming a lot of the time, can actually look like a respectable and decent centre-back next to a commanding leader and somebody who keeps him in check. The problem is that the bad form comes in pockets. And this isn't a new thing. This happened under Pellegrini. They were just bigger pockets. So we get these little runs where it's hard to really decide whether we've improved or not, because it might be, okay, we've only lost one game in seven, but we've drawn the other five. And then you start trying to dissect, but are we performing better? And Guardiola being Guardiola and being sort of the divisive figure that he is, in so much as people have their opinions about whether he suits the Premier League and is he really all he's cracked up to be, because he managed two teams that were already quite good, and built his reputation on that. Like, it causes a bit of an existential crisis among City fans to try and decide whether they're happy or not with what's going on, because ultimately the performance isn't, in a position basis, isn't a whole lot better than it was the last 2 years under Pellegrini, but the disappointments have come sort of in different ways. There's not the same sort of arrogance about it. We're not refusing to adapt. It's the trying to adapt that has caused the problems. So strictly, am I happy with third? No, because it felt like we should have been better. But against the expectation and how good we were at the start of the season. But then you look at the squad and it was never really going to be good enough to do exactly what Guardiola wanted it to do. And we saw just how bad it can be at times. Then third place is actually, it's probably about par for the squad, but not for the manager. And so it's a hard divide to try and work out how I feel about it. So I guess I have to think more in terms of performances and is the progress tactically and all the rest of it. And do I see a point where it gets better? And I absolutely do. And so that is, I suppose, what leads to the acceptance of third place and not being annoyed about it whilst acknowledging that it has to be seen as below par.
Yeah, a part of that could probably be attributed to the fact that Aguero missed a significant amount of games this year, a lot of them through suspension instead of through injury, as people may have expected. And there was stuff going on with him and Pep Guardiola, people saying he was definitely leaving. He's come out now and said that he's not, pretty fully that he was going to be staying. What's your view been of just what's been happening with Sergio Aguero this year? I mean, nobody can deny the talent, obviously. Probably the second most impressive performance over the season is that Aguero still ended up with, what did he end up on, 19 or 20?
He ended up on 20 because he's joined the club now. He's one of only five players in Premier League history.
So was he Kane this year?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he's one only to do it in three consecutive seasons.
Yeah, and Kane and Aguero both obviously did it in far fewer minutes. But what have you thought of Aguero this season, and do you think it has any significant impact for the future?
Well, clearly, he didn't start the season as a typical Guardiola player, and Guardiola is absolutely ruthless if a player, regardless of their quality, doesn't fit exactly what he wants to do. If he doesn't see them as a team player, if they don't run the channels, or if they're not selfless, you know, he's very much about the team and not about the individual. And I'm fine with that. I think that's the right way to be. But it was a shame when it looked like that might be suffocating Aguero or might be costing him a place at City, because he is a great striker. He's well on course to become our top scorer of all time if he stays, which he will do now. He'll probably have that chalked off by about October. So goal scoring wise, there's absolutely no question that the quality is still there. He had a little dip around sort of December, January, when he looked like he was struggling for confidence a little bit. But his quality has never been in question. It's how malleable he is, I guess, and how he can be shaped into Guardiola's team. And although at one point around February it looked like the worst thing for him, I think it might prove to be the case that the best thing that happens for Aguero in his City career is the arrival of Gabriel Jesus, because there is no doubt that after Jesus was brought in and Aguero was taken out of the team to accommodate that, there's no doubt that when Jesus then got injured and Aguero came back in almost by default, that he was more of a rounded player, that he seemed to have taken on board just what was earning Jesus all the lavish affections of his manager and the public praise and everything. And I would guess that at times the way Guardiola spoke about Jesus was an indirect way of speaking about Aguero, never as a criticism, but as an encouragement of like, this is how good you can be, but you've got to put the work in. And he's become a far more, in a short space of time, a far more rounded player, more of a team player. And again, it's a hard one to actually define exactly what that means, because it's not that he wasn't hardworking or wasn't a team player before. But he's now a different kind of team player. The way that he makes his runs off the ball and sacrifices himself for his team are certainly different to what he was doing before. He doesn't try and take everything on himself. He doesn't have to be the hero. And if you were to ask me, is Aguero a better player now than he was at the start of the season, then the only answer I could give would be yes. And I guess that to me probably says everything. And he's now playing with Jesus. The last two games of the season against West Brom and Watford, they were both fantastic. And he's got, you know, Watford, he should have had a hat-trick. He probably should have had four goals. So the rewards are still there for him. It's not like he's sacrificing the glory completely, or he's sacrificing this incredible goal tally that he has. He's still going to be putting the ball in the net. And so I think he'll stay, because I think Guardiola will have seen enough of him now to know, yes, he can play with Jesus. Yes, he can be the player that Guardiola needs him to be. And he's still going to be the clinical Aguero that has become one of the world's best strikers.
Yeah, you mentioned the partnership there with Jesus, which has proven effective over the last month of the season here. But confused as to what's supposed to happen next year, because obviously you have Iheanacho, but it very much seems from everything that's been reported that he's on the way out. But if you're planning on using Jesus and Aguero, that leaves Nolito, I guess, as backup options. Is that something you can do heading into the season, or could it be a case where Iheanacho's exiting the door and holding it for somebody else who's coming in?
Well, just first of all on that, Nolito is almost going. And we're probably going to lose big time on him as well. I mean, we only paid, in relative terms, like 13.8 million. But there's talk of him going to Spain for less than four.
Wow.
Yeah, and that seems like
a Negredo-y all over again.
Yes, but less spectacular. Like, he never hit the heights that Negredo did, so the fall off wasn't as big.
Yeah, like but that first half season, he was on fire.
Yeah, that Negredo and Aguero in that first half of the season were the best strike partnership I've ever seen at City. So Nolito will probably go. Iheanacho, I think, will be out the door because he's not getting the chances. But I think it would be I'll say not getting the chances. That's obviously based on what Guardiola sees in training. And he's not taken the chances that he's had this season. Although he still puts the ball in the net, the games do pass him by. There's no question about that. And Guardiola won't settle for a player whose only contribution is goals. Bizarre though that might seem for a striker, but it's just not the way our game is played. So it does leave us in a very interesting position that Guardiola likes to play with one striker, but he can't keep Aguero and Jesus and do that. They're both going to need to play a lot of football because they're both good enough to, and they've both proved that they'll be effective in the Premier League doing that. But if he plays two strikers and doesn't have a backup, like, if you play one striker, you can't have two backups, can you? Because the third one's going to have to be significantly less quality.
Yeah.
Because you can only realistically rotate two. So you have to have an Alito or an Iheanacho, but then you need them to be good enough that if they're called upon, they can win you. Basically, they can be good enough to play in a team that wants to win the league and play in the Champions League. So it's a really, really difficult balance to strike. And Guardiola's always done it previously with small squads, but I think he's realising that he can't do that as well as he'd like to in the Premier League. If we're going to play with two strikers, it's going to make it difficult to play with two wingers, which is going to be difficult for Sané and Sterling. And we're being very, very heavily linked with Alexis Sanchez, to the point that I think the interest is genuine. Whether it'll come off or not, I don't know. But then, where do you fit him in without Aguero, Jesus, Sterling or Sané significantly losing out on game time? And making De Bruyne and Silva work and not having a massive effect further back. where we're already really vulnerable on the counter. So it's really hard to consider it just as what happens up front, because what happens up front has such a knock-on effect on this really sort of finely, or what should be and what will hopefully become, this really sort of finely tuned strategy and tactical plan. It's really hard to make it all fit together, which is where Guardiola will earn his money, because somebody's going to have to miss out if we sign another striker. And it's going to have to be somebody good who's going to almost undersell themselves for the sake of a team. And why you bring, how you convince somebody to come and join in with that, I don't know.
Yeah.
But Aguero and Jesus have to play together if they're going to be as good as they have been towards the end of the season. It's a question to me. It's a question at this point without an answer. You can only lay out what the issues are.
Mm. Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see how you resolve that, especially as you could probably convince Iheanacho for one more year to stay on as your third striker if you needed him. But
yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, I guess that kind of brings us into summer plans, as we've already talked about the forward position. You also have some high-profile players leaving. Obviously, Pablo Zabaleta, from everything we're hearing, West Ham seems likely for him. Gael Clichy confirmed that he's leaving. Yaya Toure, I thought, was also definitely leaving, but in our little pre-show chat, you said maybe that's not the case.
Yeah, just first of all, on Zabaleta, that guy, I would love him. It'd be hard to see him playing against City, but I'm pretty sure he would be adored at West Ham. I'd like to see him at Newcastle, because that is a fan base that would absolutely take to him as one of their own, I think. But the send-off that he got at City was one of the most touching things I've ever seen at a City game. And for one small moment in time, it felt like all the stuff that goes with modern football and being the club we are these days, it all dissipated, and it was just back to being the fans and the club again, and there being a proper bond between them. And there's a weird atmosphere at the Etihad these days, and I hope that that moment is something that City take on board and try and do something with. Obviously, you can't have one of your idols leave every week to try and create a good atmosphere, but it felt like the club and the fans were back together. I know that sounds really twee, but in a way that hasn't been the case in years. And Zabaleta deserved every moment of that send-off. But it is the right decision for him to leave, as it is with Clichy, who he's been a good value signing for what we've got out of him, but he's not at the races anymore. And then on Yaya, I would love him to stay. He's had a great season, considering everything that happened at the start, where Pep refused to play him until there was an apology for the actions of his agent and his sort of rent-a-quote comments. It's been great to see Yaya step in and still have that quality to quite often dictate the pace of a game from quite a deep position. And this sort of metronomic quality that he has and his intelligence, it's never gone. It's never disappeared. And so as long as his body holds up, then his brain's still going to work for him. Like, his brain's still going to read the game perfectly. He's one of the most intelligent players one of the most intelligent midfielders to have ever played in the Premier League. So with all that in mind, I think it's an absolute no-brainer that we have to offer him a year extension. And I think he'd accept at his age that a pay cut would come along with that. It's not going to dent his financial situation too often to take a pay cut to stay a year at a prestigious team and carry on playing in the Champions League. And it just makes sense from City's point of view to have that experience around a guy who has done literally everything. I mean, the only thing he's not won is the World Cup. Like, he's even won, you know, he's got honours at international level with the African Cup of Nations. He's won everything domestically that you could ever hope to win, most of it multiple times. So I don't see any benefit in letting him go. I only see a downside there. There would have to be an acceptance, though. The one sticking point might be that he's not going to be starting every week. But I'm sure he can. I'm sure he must be able to live with that for staying at City, where regardless of all the nonsense that's gone on with the IR in the past, there is still a connection between player and fans. And he worked his backside off this year to get fit and to still play for the club when it looked like when the easy thing for him to do would have been to just let it all fritter away, and he didn't. So that's a great thing to have around the club and an inspiration, I think, to any younger players or more inexperienced players, a great person for them to learn from. So I think City have to offer the contract. It's the only sensible thing for them to do. And then it's in Yaya's hands what happens from there.
Yeah, well, it would be very interesting to see if Yaya did indeed stay. Obviously, he's huge for the club. And it would be cool if he got a Zabaleta-like send-off next season, if he does indeed stay, instead of just like this kind of up-in-the-air stuff. But regardless, you will definitely be needing to add places that aren't just up front. Arguments could be made basically throughout the defense, and even a potential player for my beloved Tottenham and Kyle Walker could be bandied about. Well, what positions do you think you most need to strengthen?
The defense is the key one. I mean, like the strike positions are debatable, but the defense needs a massive overhaul. Probably right back from the goalkeeper. There is a bit of an argument to say that Bravo might be better in his second season. And, you know, it maybe holds some water because he's obviously not a terrible, terrible goalkeeper. His career is too good for that. But certainly it hasn't worked out with City. And personally, I'd be surprised if he stayed as number one. But I think we will lose one of the goalkeepers, because Caballero's out of contract anyway. I would imagine, to me, Bravo's position does seem pretty untenable at City. I don't understand what would be in it for him to stay. He doesn't, you know, that he's not particularly well-liked by the fans. He gets hounded by the media, and not unjustifiably. That's just a comment on his performance, and that's, you know, that's what he has to deal with because they've not been good enough. But right back from the goalkeeper, we might be overhauling the entire defensive structure. So Company is clearly still good enough. He's proven that. And he's played a run of games like he hasn't played in years at the end of the season. And there's no mental hangover from him. He doesn't pull out of extending himself. He doesn't pull out of challenges or anything like that. It's like he's never been away, which is quite remarkable. But you can't rely on that, because actually his history does show that he does get injured. So we're going to have to try and sign a commanding centre-back who is good enough to play with Company or to replace him. But if you have him with Company, then that means that John Stones is missing out, who is still a phenomenally talented young player and we need to get our investments worth out of. So we don't want to hold him back. But if Company's still good enough to do it, we don't want him to be the player that misses out. So unless we revert to three at the back and pick up on that thread again, which we might well do, but there's potential for, once again, a very good player to miss out. And I suppose that's, you know, boo-hoo, big club problems, I guess. But it's not really that ideal. You don't want to be losing good players when they're in great form. And that's potentially what we're running ourselves into. But if we go three at the back, I guess that would make sense of, we need to replace the fullbacks anyway. So it would allow us to do that. If we go three at the back with two wing backs, we could do that without it being too dramatic. I guess it's just a sort of natural evolution. And I think, and you may feel free to offer a counter opinion if I'm talking nonsense, but I think Walker would probably fit that. His ability to get up the line, he's I think he's better defensively than what we've got, because what we've got isn't great. Like I said, we know Zabaleta's gone anyway, but for all that I love him, his legs weren't there anymore and he wasn't as good at the time in the tackles as he was. And Sanya just, he bowed out of the team pretty much completely, and I assume will go. So having Walker, who's better defensively and can also get up the pitch and get a delivery and link up with our creative players and play that game, it will make a hell of a difference, I think. We will need to do something similar on the left. There's lots of links. I think it's Mendy at Monaco we've been linked with and could make sense. We've been linked with Alexandro at Juventus and could make sense. But if we are seriously interested in Bonucci, like we were last summer, then you'd have to fancy that taking Bonucci and Sandro is probably pretty unrealistic. And it is obviously hard to decipher at this time of year just how much of that is paper talk anyway. And then midfield, I would imagine, we'll go in for another defensive midfield type player, because Fernando doesn't really get much of a look in, and that's fine, because I'd imagine he will end up maybe a mid-table Premier League side. He's clearly got some Premier League quality about him, but he's not really a good fit at City. Yaya may have a diminished role. We don't know what the future holds there yet. But it's a difficult one, because then depending how we play, like, we need to be adaptable and we will have more than one formation to use. We're going to need to be really wary of the fact that we are susceptible to the counter-attack. Now, if Kompany stays fit or we get a similar defender, then the defensive organisation should be better to deal with that, but we still need a bit of screening in front of them. So, yeah, I don't really envy Guardiola with working out how to overhaul this squad, because I think the holes that it's got, yes, there's personnel out there to plug it, but making it work within the current system, with, you know, amongst the resources that we've already got, I don't think is particularly easy. I think it throws up a lot of questions, and we may start the season with more questions, the new season with more questions than answers, which I suppose will be quite exciting to see what comes of it. But there's more than meets the eye, I think, to work on with the personnel.
Yeah, are you surprised that it got to this stage with some of these aging players for Manchester City? Like, we all knew that this was coming, and there are still older players there, like Kompany, obviously, at the back, and if Yaya Touré stays, he'll be another one. But, I mean, we always just assumed that things like that would be addressed, and I suppose there have been things like Gabriel Jesus being brought in, John Stones, those are moves for the future. But are you surprised that some of these positions were run this late?
Well, yeah, because the younger players that have come in weren't replacing older players. So Jesus coming in, he's not replacing a veteran striker, is he, or somebody who's on the way out. He's an additional youthful attacking player. Same for Sané, same for Sterling, same for De Bruyne, who is, okay, he's not a kid, but he's still got his best years in front of him. So the young players that have come in haven't addressed the ageing problem. They bring the average age down, of course, but they don't address the areas where age is an issue, which is primarily the defensive positions. We had four fullbacks in Kolarov, Clichy, Zabaleta and Sanya, who all signed contract. Well, Sanya would have signed his contract when he was in his 30s already. But the other three would have signed their last contracts pretty much when they were in the 20s, like late 20s. And long-term contracts. We knew when we did that, you know, I think I've said this before, but age doesn't surprise anybody. You know, we all know exactly how old we're going to be at any given point in time, don't we? So City knew when they gave those contracts, well, in 5 years' time, these guys that have signed contracts at 28 are going to be 33.
Yep.
Like, so how you fail to address that baffles me. And we've just sleepwalked into the problem. And the really annoying bit about it is the club that is most comparable to City in the Premier League, and it's like it's a tired comparison, or it's an easy one, but it's Chelsea. Like, clearly, for the resources, for the way that they had to buy sort of really good players for a bit, but that wouldn't really kick them onto the elite step, but you had to sort of make do with that and take the hit on their wages. We went through all that process. We went through those growing pains, but we didn't learn from them. Chelsea hit the ageing problem as well, and they suffered for it. And we didn't look at that and think, this is going to happen to us at some point. And it has done. It has happened. And so for that reason, that's one of the things that really gets Guardiola off the hook this year for not winning anything and for not really bedding his ideas in as quick as everybody wanted, because he's been left a squad that wasn't ready for it. You're teaching, okay, yes, you can teach an old dog new tricks. Like, he did it with Lahm, he did it with Robin, but you can't do that before old dogs, I suppose, at the same time, and expect really effective results. So on that regard, I think the man who's got to be facing the sternest questions in the summer review will be Cheeky Bergeristein, who's basically in charge of all that. And I think Guardiola has much more of a say over transfers than Pellegrini did. But still, Bergeristein oversees a lot, and he hasn't done the job that he's there to do in terms of in recruitment terms. I mean, we're in such a ludicrous position that actually one of our best options now is to try and stop Navas going back to Sevilla and accepting what appears to be a 3-year offer from them and getting him to sign a 1-year contract extension to stay as a backup right back. Like, that's genuinely now something that doesn't actually sound all that terrible to me. And wow, we shouldn't be in that. And I mean that with all respect to Navas. Navas works hard. He's actually better at the defensive side of the game than he gets credit for. But he will offer nothing in an attacking sense, because he doesn't. And that's an attacking player. And that's I think it's not a rumour. It's widely known that we've offered that contract. It's just, or that we're going to offer that contract at least. But where it ends up now, I don't know. But it's not an ideal situation. And it's all of our own doing. We've nobody to blame but ourselves.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it improves in future, because as I mentioned, there are going to be some players hitting that peak or hitting that age limit soon again. One thing on the keeper situation, I really don't know what you're going to do next season. As you mentioned, Bravo not particularly good. Caballero already, I guess technically he's now out of contract. I was going to say in the last year, but the season's over now.
Yeah.
Joe Hart seems like there's no way back for him. What is the goal there?
Well, this is, it's so hard to answer like succinctly or with just a straight clear cut, like this should happen or that should happen. Like, I fully back Guardiola's, I hate the word, but his philosophy and what he wants from a goalkeeper. I fully am in favour of that. And so for that reason, I accept why he moved Joe Hart on. Personally, to me, it shouldn't have been a priority. It wouldn't have been a decision that I would have made, but Guardiola's paid a lot of money and he makes big decisions, and that's what we brought him in to do. So we have to accept it when he does it. We have to back them in doing that. So there is no way back for Hart, because he's not what Pep needs. His distribution isn't good, and there was a hell of a lot of revisionism on that when the English press got so upset at a foreign manager bombing out England number one. Like, suddenly they imagined that Joe Hart could pass a ball, and he can't. But he is a great shot stopper. He's a great goalkeeper. But that isn't really Pep's priority. Like, the two seem to be of equal status in his mind, being good with your feet and being a good goalkeeper. They're sort of equal. So Bravo is in the other direction, where he is good with his feet. He does give us more than Hart did. He reads the game well in that regard. And at times I'd suggest that when he's made mistakes along those lines, where his distribution hasn't been the best, then that has been because the defenders haven't quite been in tune with what he should be doing. But he goes so far the other way and doesn't stop shots. I mean, he literally doesn't stop shots. If it's on target, it's probably a goal. And that's not necessarily because of his technical quality. I think that's more his confidence is absolutely shot to pieces. Because this is a guy who has kept goal at the very highest level to a good standard. And so we ended up in this weird halfway house where Caballero, who's sort of the medium point in, or the midpoint in both of those regards, ended up being our best option. And he's done all right, to be fair to him. He gave us some big moments. Made some good saves at key times in games that kept us clean sheets, and we definitely look better for him. But I don't know how you resolve it in the summer other than just going throwing a load of money at a goalkeeper again. It seems the only way, but I don't know. You can't go out and buy Manuel Neuer. You probably can't go out and buy Ter Stegen. So, like, my knowledge of ball-playing goalkeepers isn't enough to offer a satisfactory answer. I mean, we've been linked with everyone from Jordan Pickford and Jack Butland to is it pronounced Donnarumma at AC Milan? Clearly highly talented, one would cost a hell of a lot of money, and if you can get him, then you've probably got your goalkeeper situation resolved for the next 15 years. But how realistic it is, I don't know. And how, if he's the right keeper for Pep, I don't know. It's also hard to answer because nothing's cut and dry with Guardiola, because he doesn't, like, I don't mean this in a pretentious kind of way, but he doesn't see the game like most other coaches, does he? The way that he approaches it is quite different, and so he's very, very hard to second guess. So my answer is that I expect at least one new goalkeeper, but who it'll be, I don't know where you start to unravel that one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how you address that, as all these other things. But if you had to make a far too early guess for 2017-18, what do you think the objective will be? Obviously, we've talked before, like 2 or 3 years ago, I forget exactly how long it was, but like it was just Champions League. Like, get out of the group stage, whatever else is fine. It feels, as a neutral, like maybe it swung the other way and like you just probably want to win the Premier League again.
Yeah, I mean, there's two answers to this, really. From a club perspective and a fan perspective, like my personal perspective as a fan, they're probably quite different, because I will always, always value the Premier League the highest, because I think it's the biggest test of your quality. It tests you the most over the season. It gives you the most variety of difficulties that you have to overcome. And you can win the Champions League without being the best team in it. You can't do that in the Premier League. So that will always be my personal priority. For the club, it must be beginning to feel like a long time now since we've won the league. For our outlay and for the quality that's in the squad and that's now in the management team, 3 years is really longer than we would have expected to go without winning the league when Chelsea have won it twice and Leicester have won it, you know. And obviously Spurs have, in that time, come up to be the best challenger in both seasons and will probably continue to be a very good challenger. Our foot has really come off the pedal in that regard. So I think the Premier League has to be the bread and butter. That has to be the main aim, and the aim has to be to win it. But we're always going to have this thing now, as long as Guardiola's manager, the aim goes beyond just winning trophies, doesn't it? And again, it sounds pretentious, but it is about winning it in a certain style. Guardiola wouldn't have been happy to win the league this year playing the way that Chelsea play. And that's not because there's anything wrong with it. It's just not what Guardiola does. So the two run side by side. The aim is to embed this style of play so that we are more of a Guardiola team, and so that this is a style of play that permeates the club for basically the rest of time. I mean, that's the ultimate aim, to have this identity that sticks with us forever whilst winning trophies, and that's not an easy thing to do. The Champions League has to be better. Going out in the last 16 after making the semi-final last year wasn't acceptable, particularly having held the lead that we did over Monaco, from being 5-3 up in the first leg. To blow it over at their place was really, really bad, and one of the low points of the year. It's progress on all fronts, isn't it? You always want to get further in every competition when you've not won any of them and you're capable of, in theory, winning any of them. Like, the quality should be there to do that. I guess a minimum target in the Champions League would be to get back to the semi-final stage, and that the Premier League, the only target, in terms of just outright where you're going to finish, the only target can be to win it.
All right, fair enough. Well, we fortunately get a couple months off, in theory, anyway. But in the interim, where can folks find you?
So I am on Twitter at Richard the Burns, where I may spend the summer still milking the fact that United finished sixth, as I tweet about a lot. Greatly enjoy that. But I also talk about other stuff. And I write for... Yeah. It's always there as the undercurrent, but sometimes other things stick the head above the parapet. I write two articles for Yahoo Sport UK about City. I do get a month off after I've got one more article to do for that, but I will be back next season or once pre-season starts. And I am part of the Blooming Podcast, who are on Twitter at Blooming Podcast. We also have the summer off, but we are finishing our season next week with a live show in front of a live audience in Manchester at Gulliver's Bar. If any of your English listeners wish to come along, we'd greatly appreciate that. It should be on Thursday, the 1st of June. That's where I am.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on today and for your appearances all throughout the season. We've really appreciated it, and best of luck next season.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.